write a report and share data on a set of standards. And the standards are things like integrity, student learning, all the rest of that, college's planning and budgeting processes. And because these were two items, and everybody takes these real seriously, and Middle States took them real seriously, pretty much in the search process. And when the Board of Trustees said, you know, they're interested, and they were kind enough to give me an offer, I started joining the team that was working on it. When I started, that was really an absolute priority. We submitted their report later in the summer. We did all the ongoing work through the summer. A team came in September, toward the end of the month, said, okay, we're going to check everything out. The team writes up a report, makes recommendations to the overall commission. That takes a little while. We kept working really, really hard on these issues and other earlier in November that said, great, you've met all the criteria. College never lost accreditation, but they said, yep, you were in really, really good shape. And they also asked that we send them a report on learning outcomes assessment next August to show that the good work happening is continuing. So this is an absolutely essential step to the college, not only having a strong foundation, but building that infrastructure. So not only can we promise quality, we can take the guidance, the advice, the criticisms, all the rest through that peer review process and become a stronger institution going forward. And college, just everybody stepped up in really, really good ways. I was just at the Middle States annual conference in Philadelphia, got some more feedback. And we're going to do everything we can, not only to make sure that we not only meet or exceed all those standards, but our next visit, which is scheduled for 2030, we'll start prepping. We've already started prepping for it. We'll be in good shape going forward.
Part of what community colleges are all about is people at different places in their lives being able to, get more education, get a leg up, do something different. And so along those lines of having to accommodate where people are at with their lives, one of the things that the college had was like a residence hall, this last hall for students to stay. That has closed. And I'm wondering, that seems to have impacted fall enrollment. Does the college, what are you doing to address this issue, and what can we say about this?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I can't speak with any detail about the actual specific plans of the residence hall because it's in litigation. I can share a little bit about that history and where we are. SUNY Sullivan was one of the first community colleges in the state of New York to build a residence hall. And for those back in the day, and I understand that you're an alum, so you might be part of that back in the day, different environment, different enrollment, different strategies, and a lot of students crowded to the residence hall, and many students really from out of the county were there as well. That model doesn't work the same way now. Residence halls aren't built the same way. They are organized differently. And we do have a separate residence hall, an eco dorm that has smaller students that was built in the teens that does fit that model. It's suites with small kitchens and all the rest of that. That holds approximately 45 students. But the big residence hall, that model no longer works. That end of, I guess you'd call it that model, through us and many other community colleges really stopped during the pandemic. And now very, very few community colleges, both in New York State, but really around the country, are trying to get into the residence hall business. It's a different kind of thing. So during that transition and the closure of that hall, without casting any blame or anything like that, I don't think the college had the bandwidth or the structure to start thinking about new outreach, new models, all the rest of it. And in our analysis, we think that that closure actually hurt in terms of enrollment and structures during this transition. A significant number, probably about 100 students in terms of loss. So what we've started doing is not only marketing and reaching out to students about this smaller residence hall, but also changing some of the ways in which we market programs, student experience and expectation. And we're in the process of thinking about how we can create more of a real quality on-campus experience or those who might be driving to the college, spending a couple days a week with us, food services, study areas, support areas, all the rest of it. Different model than the residents hold large numbers, but ones which we think some confidence we can provide a really high quality experience.
And as you say, things have changed since that hall was built, and things have changed since I was there as a student. And so that's why I want to ask about St. Sullivan. You know, is facing challenges. So are community colleges, around the country, and continuing higher education more broadly, I think. And yesterday I had a conversation like this with people from my field, media, working in news media, talking about how things have changed and how are we meeting those changes? How are we not meeting those changes, and what are the community needs? So, and I feel like as this whole conversation we have, we keep talking about change, and we're talking in the shadow of bigger changes that are happening in the world, demographically, technology wise, changes in the workplace. So, before we wrap up, I was wondering if you could tell me from your perspective, what is community college in 2024? Like what has changed about the role of this type of institution in the community?
That's such a great question, Jason, and I'm really glad you asked it. I guess what I would say is that community colleges in many ways are in a role where they are the economic engines of their community when working well effectively. They're a bridge to many, many different things, to many, many different people. And that means that the idea of sort of like the college is a fixed building in a fixed place that you go to, you take your classes, then you go someplace else and you get an education, that doesn't work well for many students. And I'll spell it out really kind of quickly with like our nursing program. What we do with healthcare and nursing is really, really important to the county. Super, 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 super important. That means that we not only will take students who are kind of like traditional, or what you think of 19, 18, graduating from high school and want to go to college and want to become a nurse. So we help them in set programs, become a nurse, place them clinical placements, work in jobs. But we also get students who have done something different in their late 20s, their 30s, or career changers, all the rest of it. They want to come back and be nurses. Well, maybe they not be ready for the nursing program, but they will start with us and they will take biology and all of those basic classes that you need to do to get into a nursing program. Then within that, there are also those who want to go to a four-year institution and study nursing, and those who want a degree from us, which will get them immediately placed in the field. So you have to have forks in the program, so to speak, as well. Add to that, there's something called a CNA, a Clinical Nursing Associate degree, which is a shorter term program that is kind of like a bridge for someone who wants to get in the field, but doesn't involve actually becoming a registered nurse. It gets you to that next early stage. The college is going to be offering that program in the spring semester. We're also adding a weekend evening cohort program in the spring semester because we've got people who are working full time during the day that want to become nurses, that have to learn in a different modality at a different time. So what does that mean for it with the community colleges? It means that we've become many, many different things to different people while still remaining true to our mission, which is how do we get folks the education and a quality opportunity that they need? And if you can like read into the future about what media is going to be like in 5 years, we would love to know that as well for the college, because we are working really hard to anticipate what that profile might be in 5 years for where, how many people want to be on campus, want to learn off campus, want to learn online, want to learn in different ways, and what those things might be.
Been talking to SUNY Sullivan President David Potash. David, I want to thank you so much for talking to us. I want to wish you a happy new year and the best for the year ahead. Thank you so much.
And I want to thank you, Jason, and it's a special delight to talk to you as a SUNY Sullivan alum. You are a success, and we're just very, very, very happy to have this conversation. I look forward to seeing you in the new year.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks to Jason Dole for that interview as well. We'll take a break, and when we come back, seniors, beware of this Medicare fraud, durable medical equipment fraud. We'll learn more after a break. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. gift wrapping, and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
For more than a century, the chapel at King's College, Cambridge, has presented a Christmas Eve service with readings, carols, and anthems featuring its renowned choir.
You can hear this at midnight on Christmas Eve or 10 a.m. on Christmas Day, right here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The New York Statewide Senior Action Council is an organization dedicated to advocacy for the rights of seniors in New York State, and they want folks to know about their Medicare Fraud of the Month for December, Durable Medical Equipment Fraud. The Statewide Fraud of the Month is a resource for New York State's senior citizens and caregivers to detect, prevent, and report healthcare fraud, errors, and abuse. Maria Alvarez is the executive director of New York Statewide Senior Action Council, and she joins us this morning. Maria, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you so much for having me on your program.
Well, thanks for being here. And you have this, what you're calling Fraud of the Month program. I want to talk about this fraud that we're talking about, durable medical equipment. But how does this monthly sort of Fraud of the Month program help raise awareness among seniors in New York State?
Yes. Well, the reality is that Medicare fraud costs the taxpayer $60 billion a year. And it can, and I mean, if we just imagine it as you and I getting up to go to work every day, right, to do the things that we do, well, these fraudsters wake up every morning, and what their job is to imagine ways that they could defraud the public. So, and it's gotten to the point where, you know, $60 billion that costs that the taxpayer merits us telling people about what the latest methodologies are used for their work.
So
what we try to do is, believe me, if there's anything happening in society, there's a fraud for it.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
Yeah. So let's talk about this durable medical equipment fraud. What is that, and why is it a concern?
Well, so what people might find is that they either receive calls on the phone, of people that, you know, unsolicited calls where the person on the other line is, on the other end of the line is trying to offer you, a back brace, a wrist brace, knee, you know, any type of durable medical equipment, that you haven't sought. And the reason why it's concerning is because what they're looking for is your Medicare number, because once they have that Medicare number, then they start charging all sorts of things on your account. The reason why that is very concerning is because it will affect what type of legitimate care that you can seek and how your doctor is going to treat you as well. So it's very important to beware of any time, you know, if somebody calls and says, oh, you qualify for a back brace, or, you know, how are you feeling? Do you need something? And you say yes. And the key is that they'll say it's free to you, because nothing is free, really. And then what they're looking for is that they'll say, so give me your Medicare number and we can and I'll send it to you right away. People have received things that they have not asked for. If you receive something that that you haven't asked for, it might mean that your number is compromised. So in that case, it's very important for you to call either CMS or call our helpline, and our counselors are able to then assist the public in making sure that that this gets rectified.
What are some of the key aspects of a durable medical equipment or DME fraud? You mentioned folks calling and saying that it's free to you. What are some other claims that folks might make, or are there tactics they might use?
Well, they'll send you things that you're not at, that you never asked for. They'll send things that multiples of things. We've had people who've called and said, "I received 50 braces. I've received 3 braces, things, and I don't know where this is coming from." They will call and again, if they tell you it's free and all you need is to give them their Medicare number, that is an alert, because you should never be giving out your card, your number, or your information to anybody except for your doctor and the doctor that you know. Because that's the other thing. When, you know, a durable medical equipment like a back brace, let's say, that is a very personalized and customized piece of equipment, right? So it really, your doctor that you know should be, you know, that you have talked to about it and who has prescribed it himself or herself should be the person who is measuring you and who is authorizing the you know, this prescription, not somebody on the phone that you don't know who's offering you something. Cause chances are what they're going to do is buy something that, you know, from just a local store that doesn't cost, you know, more than $50. They'll send it to you and they're charging Medicare hundreds of dollars for the brace. The problem is that then when you actually do need that brace, and you go to your doctor, and then the doctor, you know, charges Medicare. Medicare is going to deny it because they've already paid for a brace. So it's super important to be very, very, you know, conscious of who is examining us, who we're giving our information to, and for what purpose.
Yeah, and normally, as you said, you would be having these conversations with your personal physician, and so that is very key personal information, which a scam person would not necessarily know, and that is a clue. What are some other things to be aware of to prevent and protect yourself?
So again, one thing is don't give out your information, and you know, it's not only over the phone. It's also when you go, let's say sometimes there are community fairs where, you know, there are vendors out there and then they try to offer you services or objects or things that don't even have to do with healthcare maybe. But once you give them the information, then they are able to charge your card. So it's very important for people to guard their card as if it were your credit card or your Social Security card. Don't ever, I always tell people when you go out into the community to those events, don't even bring your card or don't divulge any information about yourself, because it could be used to then, perpetrate a fraud. Any type of information that they get. These are experts. Remember, these are experts that will, any little piece of information that you give them, they are able to then cobble together with other information that might be available, and they can identify your account.
Well, yeah, like you said, they're really just trying to get that Medicare number, and then that could compromise your personal information and be used in other fraud schemes. So it's key to hang on to that.
Exactly. It's not just once that they will charge either. They'll keep on charging, you know, your account, because for every time that they are able to successfully charge Medicare for something, they your card is golden, basically, and it's like the gift that keeps on giving. If they keep it, they're not going to charge just once. They're going to keep on charging it as long as they have your number and it's not and Medicare doesn't deny it.
Another thing to look for are internet ads or text messages promising that enrollees are, quote, qualified for, quote, free or no-cost services. Again, those are schemes, scammers trying to get your personal information. And what else should folks do if they suspect this is going on? Talk to your doctor or anybody else that they should make aware?
Yes. There are three or four places you could call. One is you talk to your doctor, right? But number one is you should always review your Medicare summary notice or your explanation of benefits notice if you're in a Medicare Advantage plan or in another type of insurance, because those documents will always detail what your activity has been with any doctor, hospital, or other aspects of your health care. If you don't recognize what is being charged, or it's a different date, or it's something that you didn't see, that you don't know who the doctor is that's charging, call them. Call your doctor's office and have a conversation. Then you could also call the plan, right? You could call Medicare or the Medicare Advantage plan that you have. But if none of that helps, or if you just don't want to, you could call our helpline, because we have trained counselors that will help you. And our services are unbiased and free. We are funded for this program through the federal government. So we're not here to charge anybody or to tell anybody what to sign up for or to sell anything to anybody. What we're here to do is to assist the public with information and also advocacy on their behalf with these institutions.
And there's more information at nyseniors.org, and that helpline is 800-333-4374. You also have an upcoming teach-in in January to help protect vulnerable populations. Can you tell folks about the topic for the January 2025 teach-in?
Yes. Well, just to let you know, our teach-ins, before I tell you a little bit about that, our teach-ins are free to the public, and they happen almost every single month. So I would say if anybody is interested, they should definitely sign up with us or call us and everything. And our teach-in is the role of the New York State Justice Center in protecting vulnerable populations. So what that is we're going to have, we always have these different professionals from different agencies who will come and give us just a little bit more information than what's out there, because it gives us their instincts. I mean, their insights into these themes. So in this one, what people could expect to hear about is how the special needs populations would be able to advocate for themselves and to make sure that that there's dignity for everybody, especially people with disabilities, in not only their place of home, but also in institutions like nursing homes and other group facilities. So it's good to start the year, because there's a lot of policy going on and changes around some of these topics. So I would encourage anybody who's interested in the rights of people with disabilities or other vulnerable populations to tune in on January 27th at 10 a.m. And that way, not only do we hear, it's only for an hour, so not only do we hear about the information, but you could also ask questions.
And there's more information about that and all of the services that the New York Statewide Senior Action Council provides at nyseniors.org. And again, that helpline, 800-333-4374. We've been speaking with Maria Alvarez, Executive Director of the New York Statewide Senior Action Council, the organization dedicated to advocacy for the rights of seniors in New York State. Maria, thank you so much and happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you.
All right.
Hopefully we'll see you in the new year.
Yes, thank you. And we'll take a break. And when we come back, a local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Ronald Kelson, and I'm working with Radio Catskill on StoryCorps, One Small Step, bringing strangers and our community together, one conversation at a time.
A lot of us are scared, and I think that's part of the big thing that divides us too, is the fear.
Definitely.
A fear of not just the unknown, but the fear of what we think we know about the other person or the other way of life.
There's still time for you to join the conversation. Go to WJFFradio.org and click on the One Small Step logo to sign up. One Small Step is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Hi, I'm Kusar Grace KG, host of the Music Emporium. 2 hours of great music right here on Radio Catskill. Sometimes I start out with a little bit of talk concerning things in the world for the week. Then I jump into some tunes that you will enjoy. Jazz, funk, blues, and more. So come and hang out with me, The Music Emporium, Tuesday night, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. It's Monday, and James B. Huntington, our local author, local economist, is here for some local economic perspective this holiday week. James B., good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
All right, let's jump in and see what happened with interest rates last week.
Well, they went down a quarter of a point. It was expected, but hardly certain. They're now, for the federal funds rate, which is about the lowest interest rate there is out of a whole grouping of them, 4.25 to 4.50%. This, of course, was their last meeting of the year. It's gone down considerably during 2024 after spending a long time at 1% higher. Next year, they're saying, really, they're coming around to saying what I've been saying all along, and that's that they won't really know until they see economic reports as the year goes on. But the emphasis is really more on inflation. There are some projections that it'll be a little higher or a little lower, but really much the same, about 2.5% with the different numbers I've been giving you. That's probably as close to a mean or median as anything this year. So it will probably stay the same thing. He did, though, Powell did say, the chair said that future rate cuts will hinge on further progress on inflation. The stock market did not like that. I'm a little surprised because they don't know very much anyway. But how much rates will fall in the future is totally dependent on what happens in the economy. Yes, the New York Times spent ink printing that.
They're finally listening to you, James B.
Yes, maybe they are. Maybe they are.
And you know, normally lower rates are good for stocks for a number of reasons, but this particular cut met with some sell-off, right? As you said,
Well, so much is baked into the cake. When stock prices change, they reflect a certain series of expectations about rates. It's great that for stocks that rates are going to be low, but they project that they will not get much lower next year when some had thought they probably would, and they still might. We don't really know. If inflation goes down, the interest rates will fall. But they don't know, and sometimes even though a good report or something can come out, it can still hurt the stock involved. Like that's been happening with NVIDIA on the AI chip side, where they turn in these barn burner quarters, and yet the stock goes down because the expectations that traders have had is that they would be even better. So it's kind of silly. It's not quite what it seems. So, but yes, certainly they like low interest rates.
We, in the last segment, we're talking about Medicare fraud. There's a gamified online job scam, or scams, I guess, going on. What are these gamified online job scams, and how can people avoid them?
Well, that's what the FTC rather, has been saying. So if you've ever been asked to like videos or rate product images to earn money online, you may have been a victim of an online task scam. Their tasks, like the gig economies, bits and pieces of jobs that they'll pay people various amounts of money. The difference with these is, well, somebody sends a text or a message of some sort to somebody who's known to be looking for online jobs. They say they get made an offer, and then comes the thing that really should be a giveaway to everyone here. The sender then asks the target to use their own money, usually in cryptocurrency, for the next set of tasks, promising them more money in return. Well, this is about as ancient a rule about anything in job searching or job offering is that, as Bruce Williams once put it, if they want a dime, a peso, a kopeck, a ruble, if they want anything up front, then it's almost certainly a scam and you should not do it, because legitimate employees do not, employers rather, do not ask for money in order for people to make more money.
Right. This week, lots of folks hitting the roads, hitting the air for holiday travel. You've got some information about aviation-related jobs that need workers, and they're training more than ever. Which job is that?
Yes. Well, there is a real shortage right now out there for aircraft mechanics. And the good thing is that there is training available at various places. One that's quoted in this Fox News article here is in Colorado, but there are others where they take you through a three-year program, and at the end, really, instead of final exams or whatever, they get you to sit for the certification exams. There's one on airframes for mechanics, and then there's another for power plants. And if you can get both of those, which is really an awfully good deal, I mean, that's been a problem with IT, is that often the schools involved are not connected with the real certifiers and such, but here they are, and they teach to this thing, and the idea is that someone would finish this three-year course and get both certifications, and then they would be solid. It would, with today's market, it would probably be relatively easy for them to get a job as an aircraft mechanic. And even starting salaries in this field are in the mid to high five figures, and they go up from there. So the catch is, of course, with things like this, we don't know if the number of jobs is going to stay high. You start a program, and then 3 years from now, you get your certificates, and it may be, there may be a lot more people on the market than there were before. We don't know, but it certainly does seem like a good field if you're mechanically inclined and you're willing to put in 3 years in school, something like this. You can have an excellent, I won't say assured, and I won't even say almost assured, but you have an excellent chance of getting a good career going if you pursue this.
This time of year, sweets and treats out there on top of mind for everyone, including Santa. And there's a particular cookie brand that is reaching $1 billion in sales, largely by wooing young fans with social media and sugar. What brand is that?
Well, this was a totally new one on me. If you don't have tween or teen girls at home, you probably don't know what it is either.
I don't.
This is Crumbl Cookies, spelled C-R-U-M-B-L. And what they are, they cater to girls. A lot of them are pink and purple and other stereotypical girl colors. They're huge cookies. They're loaded with sugar. They cost about $5 a piece, and they have 700 calories, which is more than a Big Mac.
Wow.
So some parents are doubtful about the value of these things, but anything in moderation, I guess. They're also heavily into the online thing, and they post at a certain time. They post what next week's flavors are going to be. They change flavors often, and about 8 p.m. About 8 p.m. on Sundays evening, they post these things with what the new flavors will be, and then the customers start pestering their parents to buy them. So they're extremely popular, and we never know how long they'll last, but it seems like they're doing a lot of right things with the market now. There are more than 1,000 franchise locations in the U.S., and there are supposed to be 300 more over the next year. So it's something to think of.
Wow.
Because, yeah, I did not know this company existed.
Yeah, me either.
It up very quickly.
Yeah, I'm still in my Oreos, so I guess I'm not paying attention.
Yeah, but
The Wall Street Journal headline says, the Wall Street Journal headline says, the 1 billion cookie empire that teens love and parents hate. So, wow.
Yeah. that may be extreme. You know, if you have a daughter of that age, you might put a formal cap on the number of crumble cookies a week or whatever you'll buy them. But they're not poison. They just have a lot of calories. Right. At those ages, people do burn off a lot of calories. So more power to them.
There you go. All right. How are the prices doing this morning? The numbers, they're not crumbling, are they? How's everything going?
Well, some of them are. Yes, actually, this was not a pleasant week. Okay. As of early this morning, and these are 1 week changes I'm giving you, gold, $26.22, down $37, just an ordinary down week. I mean, just sort of the median fluctuation per week, but it was down. Silver, $29.69, down 98 cents. The ratio is 88-1. Silver is looking much more like a buy when the ratio gets this high. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 42,840, dropped almost 1,000, 988. Still, it's 800 more than it was on November 4th. So really, it's given up a month and a half, of an excellent month and a half now over the last 2 weeks. Last week, as you may remember, it was down 815. NASDAQ, 19,573, that's down 354. Similarly bad, much an idea. Yeah, we're hearing things about corrections and such applied to some of these assets. So we're not in that territory yet. A correction is a 10% drop generally, and we haven't got there yet. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $69.62 per 42-gallon barrel. It is down 95 cents. It's not moving steadily up. It's just sort of really hanging around 70 now. It has not moved a long way from 70 for months now. Bitcoin, 95,938. It had such a run-up previously that that is down 8,600. Maybe profit-taking. Then a lot of that is probably still the wild fluctuations it has, but it's still way, way high by historical standards. But this past week stunk for it. British pound, 1.2576, down 81 hundredths. The euro up 1.0411, down 94 hundredths of a week. Euro might be going for $1 parity right now. For some reason, when it drops like this, it has a way of going down to $1, the same rate as we have here. But yes, the U.S. dollar is really the classy currency right now, and it means that things go down. Japanese 100 yen coin, 64 cents. That's the third straight week it's dropped a penny. So overall, this was another punk week.
All right.
There's lots of talk. Yeah, we heard the corrections. We'll see, but it's still looking like a very good year.
All right. Well, we're going to check next Monday on who was naughty and nice, I guess. In the meantime, we'll let you go check your list twice. James B. Huntington, local author and economist, who joins us every Monday with a look at local economic perspective. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, all. Working 9 to 5. What
a way to make a living. Barely getting by. All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, Harmony Talk, the podcast that showcases inspiring conversations. We'll get a chat with one of their hosts, Todd Stevens, next.
Every week on City Arts and Lectures, we bring you conversations with today's most important writers, scientists, performing artists, and cultural figures from around the world. Recorded on stage in San Francisco, talking about creativity, how we see the world we live in, and where we're headed. Join us for City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoons at 4, starting January 5th on Radio Catskill.
NPR's award-winning journalism keeps you up to date on politics, business, and all of that serious stuff. But you know, we also explore the silly side of the news, like how astronauts do chores in space.
You incinerate your dirty laundry. Well, yes.
Help make every day a little more joyful by giving to this station today. Thanks.
Make your year-end donation today at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Presented every Wednesday, Harmony Talk is the podcast showcasing inspiring conversations with dreamers and doers who have turned their dreams into reality, often against great odds. Todd Stevens is one of the hosts, and he joins us this morning. Todd, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And we wanted to talk to you about one of your recent conversations with a content creator and food influencer, Gabby Anaclerico. Did I say that right?
That's correct. Gabby Anaclerico.
Yeah. Tell us yeah. about Gabby and what she does online and the food influencing she does.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great story. And Gabby is just an inspirational figure. You know, for so many of us, Tim, you know, of a certain age, I will have to say, you know, this whole social media, attraction, especially for younger people with TikTok and all these different platforms out there, is a bit of a mystery to us. And the fact that some people can actually do this for a living and make money, you know, we wanted to learn more about that. So we went to Gabby, and she actually is known as a mukbanger, which was a term I didn't know before, but it's a Korean term for people who eat food online. Mm-hmm. And her story is really inspirational, and she was just wonderful. She was actually in college, and then she was getting in the legal field, was working on being a lawyer, and did this kind of to keep herself company, you know, as COVID was kind of coming to an end. And as people started to react to her online, she realized, I might just be able to make a career out of this. And, you know, just like that, within a year's time, she went from being a law student, graduating from American University with her undergraduate degree, to having 4 million followers on various social media channels, especially TikTok. It just blew my mind. She's just a wonderful, inspirational person.
Yeah, she's amazing with the 4 million followers, kind of become the go-to voice for food lovers and people who want to be adventurous with their food as well. You guys spoke about, you know, her rise in this space, her passions. But what I found also interesting was that you talked to her about, age-appropriate content. And with the talk of banning TikTok, government involvement in social media, censorship in social media, we've got a clip of that part of your conversation. And I want to talk to you about it on the other side, okay?
Sure.
So it's very scary to me to hear that TikTok might go away. But I do think that there should be some censorship on TikTok and other social media apps, especially when you have younger kids on these social media apps. You need censorship. One time I was in this store and this little girl was watching this video that she definitely shouldn't have. And I thought, why doesn't TikTok censor this? So I think that instead of banning it, they maybe should first try to have some of those protections in place, where kids won't allow to be seeing videos they shouldn't. So I think that is definitely what should come of this rather than banning it. But I'm just saying that selfishly because I depend on it for a living.
Well, sure. And in some sense, you must worry about that as far as the potential of continuing to be compensated for the content that you produce.
Oh, definitely. Especially, I always say kids shouldn't be on social media, but there are children that watch my videos and it gives me income, but I definitely think I will be okay not having that younger audience if it means that they won't see videos that they shouldn't on TikTok and Instagram, because it's so easy for young kids to get influenced. And I think that a main reason I am so confident and have such a good sense of self is because I didn't have all of these social media apps where I was constantly comparing myself to other people I didn't even know. So I think that definitely needs to stop. And it's unfortunate that I might lose some money, but I'm okay with that.
So you're willing to give some up for the greater good?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Like my nephews, I'm blocking them the second that they get social media. I'm like, absolutely not.
You know, that's so important to hear from somebody who actually creates content and really depends on it. You have a tremendous conscience about what people see.
It is kind of just crazy watching younger people. I was watching this video of this girl doing a get ready with me, and I was like, oh my God, she's acting like she's in her 20s. This girl is like 10 years old. When we were 10, I was dancing, I had braces, and I just had iMovie. I didn't have anything to post it on. So I think that is what we should go back to.
Interesting to hear that perspective, Todd, from her, especially since she's a content creator.
Yes, Tim, and I was surprised actually by her view on, you know, banning TikTok. Obviously, she doesn't want to ban, as she mentioned, but she really believes in content appropriate guidelines to really direct social media going forward. And it was interesting, Tim. I found that, you know, with her image online, it's definitely fun and inspirational and positive. And I asked her, you know, what's it like when the camera is off? And I had the chance meeting with her before I interviewed her in person, and she was the same person. And I wanted her to really, you know, kind of come clean. You know, you can't really be this upbeat and positive and genuine all the time. And she said, no, that's just me. And she had a similar approach to things like body image, which also is, you know, gets so much attention these days, particularly with young people. And, you know, not only does she post pictures of her eating things online, you know, some pretty interesting and, you know, some of us would consider perhaps, you know, a little on the, you know, the sweet side or the perhaps not the greatest, you know, health food, if you will. But she also posts content about how hard she works at keeping her physical fitness. You know, she's not just indulging, you know, day to day, day in and day out. She's on the treadmill. She's on the Stairmaster. She's out and about being physical. And really, again, like I said, setting that positive image, whether it's in what people see or how they spend their lives, and, you know, with a focus on positivity, body image, physical fitness, et cetera. So it was really uplifting to talk with her.
You have episodes at Harmony Talk with your other hosts as well, Lisa Shampo and Greg Frigoletto, every Wednesday. Do you have one coming up that you want folks to know about in the new year?
Well, yeah, we actually have a couple coming up. I'm actually going to speak with a couple people who are artists, which is always interesting for me. Heather Clemens is a visual artist. She's actually a muralist, and her story is great and sad and tragic in some ways, but very positive and uplifting in the long run. She actually has, you know, been a victim of, you know, some of the hurricane activity that's been in Florida over the last few years. And then she moved. And unfortunately, when she moved to Asheville, is just, you know, it's kind of like, you know, this is real lived experience. So when you see the manifestation of that in art, it's really emotional. And another gentleman I'm going to be speaking with is Mike Gino. And Mike is very well known for doing basically paintings of food. And it's so realistic that you really want to take it off the wall and try it. It's amazing. And, you know, he's a North Philadelphia artist, and I'm really interested to see some of his perspectives on, you know, where that desire came from. And that's what Harmony Talk is all about. It's, you know, finding out about the human condition that really inspired these dreamers and doers to go out and follow their passion.
Yeah.
And kind of get the backstory. I'm a backstory guy.
Yeah. You know? And inspirational, too. So it's great to hear those. Harmony Talk, the podcast, is at harmonytalkpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And we've been speaking to Todd Stevens, one of the hosts. Todd, thank you so much, and happy holidays.
Thank you very much, Tim, and happy holidays to you and everyone out there.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank, celebrating 110 years of service this year, offering deposit and loan products for all your banking needs. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. And support comes from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. In print and here on the radio, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness, depth, and humor that you can't find anywhere else. Join me every Sunday evening at 6, starting January 5th on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, broadcasting from our studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill.